All opinions expressed by Davidson Capital Management on MoneyWise are solely theirs and are based upon information they consider reliable and is subject to change without notice. You should be aware of the risk in investing in any security or investment strategy discussed on the show. Before acting, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and should seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. Got your MoneyWise guys back inside the MoneyWise studio with me for this weekend show. I have my brother Jeff, and I'm your host, Kyle Davidson. For any new listeners to the MoneyWise program, Davidson Capital Management is a fee-only registered investment advisor. We're in our 35th year of business, and with offices in San Antonio and Corpus Christi, we have your investment management needs covered throughout Central and South Texas. And if you'd like to learn more about us, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your MoneyWise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll-free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. As we kick off every weekend's MoneyWise program, I turn it over to my brother Jeff to go into the numbers from Wall Street from this past week. So, Jeff, take it away.
Okay, in the week just passed, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up about 761 points, or 2%. The S&P 500 last week was up about 117 points, or 2.3%. And the NASDAQ last week was up about 456 points, or 2.9%. Now, for the year-to-date, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 4.7%. The S&P 500 year-to-date is up 9.7%. And the NASDAQ year-to-date is up 9.4%.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
So it's just the two of us. I mean, I know last weekend we didn't have a MoneyWise program because I know you were a bit under the weather. Now Joe is a bit under the weather. So it's just the two of us. Thought we could maybe coax dad to do the show, but
I haven't been on in about 3 weeks because the week before that, I was up there in San Antonio getting things set up for our new employee there in the San Antonio office, and I wasn't done by the time the radio show was running, so I had to opt out of the show that week. So it's been a few since
welcome back.
Since I've been on, and you know, since then I've seen Dad a few times. He said, "Jeff, last time I heard you on the show, you were Debbie Downer," and I said, "Okay, well, I'm gonna pep it up a little on the next time I get on the radio." And what's not to be peppy about? I mean, We're staring right at all-time highs for all the indexes. On Friday, NASDAQ closed at all-time high. The Dow and the S&P were both, I think, on Thursday, closed at all-time highs.
Yes.
So, you know, for investors, there's not much to frown about, especially if you've got you know, 60% of your money in stocks. You're feeling pretty good this year. Especially
as long as they're in the right stocks. As long as they're in the right stocks, though.
Well, sure, in the right stocks, we've been fortunate enough to make a few really good picks here, and we're well ahead of the S&P for the year to date, which is always a good place to be, and even the fixed income side of the portfolio is doing well relative to the indexes, even though interest rates by and large for the year, especially on the longer end, are higher for the year to date. They were a little lower in the week just past. We got four trading days left for the first quarter of 2024. And since we don't, the markets are closed on Good Friday. So the momentum is definitely there. And as Kyle, you know, whenever we talk about portfolio strategy and there's a suggestion, you know, should we add this stock or that, or maybe reduce this stock? And I'm somewhat hesitant given how much the markets have run up, and Kyle always throws the question back at me. Well, Jeff, I want you to tell me what's the catalyst for the market to go back the other way. And I said, well, there's all kinds of catalysts. any one of which on any given day could cause a market reversal, or a combination of a few could cause a market reversal for a number of weeks. But it's the pattern here of late is when we have you might have a strong down day like we had, I guess it was in February when that inflation number that came out hot for the month of January, we were down 600 points that day. No one even thinks about that anymore because we snap right back.
That's what I'm saying is these down days don't last very long.
Right. And think about also another thing to think about. Remember when we went into this year, the market consensus, and I'm using that in quotations, was something like 5-6 interest rate cuts was going to happen.
Some were even saying 7.
Yeah, some as much
which
as 7.
Which is insane.
For 2020. We were never in that camp. And the Federal Reserve has been throwing cold water on that, and they threw cold water on it again this week. And they basically just said, look, we think there's going to be 3 this year. And the markets didn't fall out of bed.
Well, and I think the reason why they didn't fall out of bed is because I think the market has finally come to the realization that 6-7 was kind of crazy to think about in the first place. So that the fact that that's not going to happen was pretty much already assumed and now priced in. But I think really what it was, Jeff, is what Jay Powell said in the press conference, is that we don't necessarily have to have, you know, inflation right at our 2% target or 2.2% for us to make our first cut. I think they were able to take away a little bit more of a dovish tone from the press conference because that's what the FOMC was saying, is that, yeah, we can actually cut before we get to our mandate.
Would you say that that might be a little bit of a departure from some of the rhetoric that was, say, a year ago coming from the Fed? That they were very hard and fast. You know, we got to get to 2%. Come
back to high
water. We got to get there, yep. And we're not going to stop until we do so. And
yes.
We saw what that led to in 2022. But yes, I would definitely agree that at least from this last meeting, the speak from the chairman was a little more on the dovish side, though he did mention that these last two inflation numbers were a little higher than what they would like. But they're not, they're not talking. There's absolutely no talk at all about raising interest rates anymore. There's just none. So,
and I think he reiterated that in the actual press conference. Now, he said it a couple weeks before giving the testimony to Congress about, you know, pretty much rate increases are off the table. And he reiterated that in the press conference. So, again, that was a positive, more kind of dovish tone that was extrapolated from his press conference, even though they did lower the forecast in 2025 and reduced a potential interest rate cut in 2025, market didn't even bat an eyelash at that. Didn't even bat an eye saying that we're taking away one of our potential rate cuts in 2025. Well, let's take our first commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. You Money Wise guys, I'll be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So if you're just tuning in this weekend's MoneyWise program, continuing to recap the happenings of Wall Street over this past week. And before we went to break, we were talking about the Federal Open Market Committee had their interest rate decisions, left interest rates unchanged. Federal funds rate between 5.25% and 5.5%.
Also mention that they were going to slow the balance sheet
runoff.
I think it's going to start sometime this summer, which was received positively by the markets also.
Yeah, because that was another tool that they could be able to, that they were going to be able to use as far as from an interest rate control standpoint by not allowing or continuing the $95 billion per month of runoff. And so I know when Paul McCulley, who was kind of the right-hand man to the former bond king Bill Gross from PIMCO, I know they interviewed him several weeks ago, and they asked him that question about quantitative tightening. And is that kind of combined with the federal funds decisions, is the federal funds rate? And he said, no, they're actually two separate things, and it's kind of two different tools that they can use. So I think, like you said, Jeff, that was just a kind of add-on benefit to the dovish tone, and then now they're going to be slowing the pace of quantitative tightening, which, you know, again, over time will help bring rates down over the longer term. So all in all, it was received well. The markets obviously responded positively to it. When you look at where we ended on Friday with the S&P up without dividends, just under 10%. I mean, annualize that number. We're talking 40%. I mean, that's to say that's above average is an understatement. But one. Go ahead.
I would also say the probabilities of the market continuing at this pace for the remainder of the year is probably zero. And the probabilities of the subsequent quarters, second, third, and fourth, for the remainder of the year probably won't be as good as this quarter. Not saying they're going to be negative. Not saying we're going to give it all back. You know, so don't give me that Debbie Downer label now. But I'd have to go back and look at our predictions. It may have already exceeded my prediction for the year so far.
Not mine.
Has it exceeded Kyle's?
But it's pretty darn close.
I know you're going to throw out a very interesting statistic about recoveries from market tops. You know, we had a market top a couple of years ago. We've now gotten back to all-time highs. Now, you're going to talk about that statistic, but I also want to talk about another historic statistic, and that is the day that this show will be running on March the 23rd, and that will mark 4 years since the COVID lows that we saw on March 23rd, 2020. And in those 4 years, the S&P 500 without dividends from that COVID low are up just shy of 24% compounded. If you throw in dividends, it's probably over 25% compounded in those 4 years. Now, obviously, the 30 plus percent that we went down between the middle of February and the end of March because of COVID, that was just the market really overreacted to that, and that's part of this big, but that's a big number. I mean, it's 25% compounded return in 4 years. But I know you're going to throw out another statistic, because when you see the markets move up this far, this fast, because we've got four, unless something really drastically changes next week in the last four trading days, we're going to have four straight months of gains in the market.
Mm-hmm. And the one point, the other thing I wanted to point out, though, about that statistic, Jeff, since it is 4 years since the COVID low, is if COVID never happened, that was another number that we crunched. And if COVID had never happened, then the S&P has had annualized returns pretty much in line with historic returns of around 11%. So that the kind of way oversold conditions that we experienced in February into late March of 2020 due to the COVID pandemic is what, as you said, exacerbated that annualized return of the S&P at that 25% range. So if COVID never happened, the market is still moving kind of in lockstep with its historic long-term annualized return.
But there have been some pundits talking about the market feels maybe bubble-ish as far as it's gone up. Now, I think there's some stocks that seem a little bubble-ish. I know NVIDIA would probably be on the top of everyone's list. And, yes, we own it in our portfolios. And, yes, we've owned it for a number of years. And there are others that have somewhat bubble-ish type returns. But overall, I'm going to not steal your thunder there. Kyle found this really interesting historical chart about bull market runs. So why don't you take it from there, Kimman?
Well, yeah, and this article comes from MarketWatch, and it's titled, "The Current Bull Market is Not Exceptional," says HSBC, as it upgrades its view on U.S. stocks. And what they did is they actually looked back at the market going back to 1956, and they're looking at these different bull market runs. And in the chart, it's kind of hard not to see it, but trying to describe it visually, what they're actually showing is that the market run that we've really had so far is actually just coming up to the average return of any bull market going back to 1956. So what they're trying to say is we are no way, shape, or form in any type of a bubble market. And when you go back and look where we had the all-time high in on January 3rd of 2022, before we had the worst combined stock and bond market since 1872 at the end of 2022, the thing that they found is that U.S. equities are only 9% higher from their January 2022 highs, while gross domestic product in the U.S. has risen by 13%. So the market's performance from the January 2022 high to where it is today, it's only up 9%, while GDP's up 13%. So this is the reason why they are upgrading and putting an overweight call for U.S. equities, U.S. stocks, because the U.S. stock market has been underperforming just GDP growth since the January 2022 high. And, you know, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds trying to describe this chart, but again, when you see it, you visually can realize we're way below average as this market has been recovering from those January 2022 highs. So again, this is the reason why they are calling for an overweight of U.S. stocks. So when I hear these pundits talking about the bubble, I would love to send them this article and say, well, HSBC put this chart back with history going back to 1956. Talk to me, you know? It lays it out.
Well, one thing I would put you on the spot is, you know, where are we right now in terms of price earnings ratios? And maybe we'll look that up and talk about it in the next segment. But we got earnings season upon us. We got just a handful of days left here in the quarter. The momentum's positive. Seems highly unlikely that we're going to have big negative days over the four remaining trading days of the quarter, since there's going to be a lot of folks that are underinvested that don't want to go into the end of the quarter being underinvested, and they're going to be buying some stocks, I'm sure. But in a few weeks, we're going to be talking about earnings again. And the earnings are going to have to be there to, you know, justify some of these stock prices in these really high-flying stocks. And if they're not there, or if we have any sort of management trying to pull back expectations for the remainder of the year, that might have a dampening effect. I know Dad, when I was talking to Dad was kind of thinking that this may be a situation that and this is Dad, you know, talking to me about maybe seeing some of the highs for the year here, and the market doesn't do a whole lot after tax season, because we still have an election. And every client that I've been meeting with here of late has been saying, asking me my opinion about how much the election is affecting the markets. And to date, I would say the elections have absolutely nothing to do with the markets. The markets could care less that it's rematch of Biden-Trump. Market doesn't care. Market's not talking about it. I don't think valuations are based on it. I don't think the market doesn't seem to be handicapping either candidate. So as of right now, it's a non-event until it is. Now,
that's right. It's a not event until it is.
Whether that's this summer or later this summer going into the fall, we shall see. I see we're coming up to the break, so I'm going to stop there.
All right. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Your Money Wise guys will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So, you know, I know in the last segment we were talking about a little bit about the FOMC, the fact that from a new recent chart and some information put out by HSBC that the U.S. stock market is far from being in bullish territory. In fact, only a 9% increase in the markets since the January 2022 highs, and GDP has grown 13%. During that same time period. You know, one statistic, Jeff, that I know we've talked about on the Money Wise program every single month for going on now 2 years, leading economic indicators, and the fact that we were saying that if the economy did not go into a recession with this many number of negative leading economic indicator statistics month over month over month for the last 23, this will be the first time in history. Well, we have finally set history because this past week, leading economic indicators for month 24 came out positive, up 1%. So we have set history. Was it point? I thought it was a one. Was it point one? I thought it was a full 1%.
It was 0.1%.
0.1. Okay. So by the hair of our chinny chin chins. Right. We were in positive territory.
Also, not only that, but housing starts rose 10.7%, and
that's
existing
right.
home sales rose 9.5%. So there's nothing but positive economic news this week. I think the leading economic indicators, as an indicator of anything, has fallen way out of favor, especially since it's been so wrong for the first time in its history, which is, you know. That happens, you know. It's just like you like you point out to me when we have these discussions about stocks. What is the catalyst at this point to turn it around the other way? And you know, it's hard to find them because there is no recession on the horizon. Mm-mm. We're going to get the final reading of fourth quarter GDP here in the next week, and it's going to be positive. So unless you're telling me that the GDP in the first quarter that we're in right now is going to be negative, which we're not even going to know until the end of June if it's officially negative, and I haven't had any indications that GDP is negative this quarter. So, you know, where is it? Is this a 2025 thing now? You know, if by chance Trump gets elected, is this recession going to happen in 2025 because the Fed's going to be late to the party? You know, how many people do we hear this week talking, you know, pounding the table, you know, the Fed's got to start cutting rates now because the unemployment rate has started to tick back the other way, even though we are
Still 4%. I mean, I want to remind all of our listeners, Econ 101 from college, full employment was considered with unemployment rate between 5 and 6% was considered full employment. We're below 4 right now. Even the U6, which is the underemployment report, which I kind of consider the true unemployment report, is still hovering around historic lows. So positive GDP, pretty much full employment, talking about the market, is it in a bubble or not, and how much further could it run? I just pulled up a statistic of looking at how much money is in money market accounts here in the U.S., and we're talking a shade over $6 trillion. That is with a T, folks, $6 trillion in cash. So where is that cash going to go? Where is it going to end up? Could be going to some bonds, could find its way into the stock market. Well, that's a lot of money.
That cash right now, if it's allocated properly, should be yielding 5%.
Sure.
That's basically what a high yield money market fund is yielding right now. And most of the banks, you know, for CD buyers, if you want to go out a year, 18 months, most of the banks are offering CD rates around 5%. Yeah, you probably have to have a jumbo to do it. Some of that money, you know, I don't know how much of that money can even go into stocks that's restricted to cash. Some of that money will probably be more attracted to getting out of cash once cash rates start going back the other way. But we're not going to see that until the Fed starts cutting rates. And, you know, I don't think that's happening. I know that now the conventional wisdom is
in
June,
July at the earliest,
for the first rate cut. I just don't see it. I just don't see them cutting rates before the election unless unemployment really takes a turn, and we're not hearing about it, you know, other than a few layoffs here and there, we're not hearing about any mass layoffs at big corporations. So with the inflation situation, such that we've had the Federal Reserve Chairman described as two bumpy statistics in the last 2 months with regards to CPI, you know, if we have a few more bumpy numbers in April or in May, you know, that's just going to push them back even further. To me, the earnings have to justify the stock prices on a stock-by-stock basis. And this is the quintessential stock picker's market.
Mm-hmm. Because, no, it is.
Because the equally weighted is still behind the
market cap weighted,
not as much as it has been, you know, as it was last year, but there's still a gap. But you had an interesting question this week, Kyle, that pointed out how this is such a good stock picker's market, because you did our annual meeting at the church. Mm-hmm. In Round Rock, and you had a question when we were talking about individual stock performance of the portfolio, and I hate to steal your thunder here, but you had a question like, so how did the portfolio beat the market averages in individual stocks when we didn't own all of the Magnificent Seven stocks?
And the answer for 2023
is – yeah, for 2023
and
so far this year. And the answer to that question is there's so many other stocks that get no love at all, love in terms of publicity from the financial entertainment press. It's all about AI and that. But there's a lot of other companies that don't necessarily have, you know, that are in the AI space. Maybe they support the AI space in some way, from a technology point of view. But there are other stocks out there that are also doing exceptionally well away from the Magnificent Six, Seven, or Five, however you want to describe it. And so that's how we were able to accomplish that.
Yeah,
that's why
actually
there's a stock. It's a stock picker's market.
Picker's market. And here's the classic case in point, because so far year to date, outside of NVIDIA, our second best performing stock is a specialty insurance company. And it has tech-like performance, and it has had tech-like performance, and we've owned it for years, and we've got well into the triple-digit returns in this position, and it's up over 53% year-to-date. And it's an insurance company.
If we gave them out, nobody would know what it was.
Yeah, nobody would know what it was. But through extensive amounts of research, and we are active asset managers, through our proprietary screening process, our dedicated and very complex and in-depth research process, this stock was identified some years back, and it has been nothing but an outperformer compared to the S&P 500. That's just one of a multitude of stocks. And so you don't have to own all of the Magnificent Seven to outperform the S&P 500 index on the market cap weighted index. Like Jeff said, it's a stock picker's market. You have to have your methodology And we're very fortunate at Davidson Capital Management. We've been doing this 35 years, and we have a proprietary screening and research process that has truly identified some great outperformers. And it's not just focused in the tech space. In fact, when you look at our overall stock portfolio as a composite, it's just slightly more allocated to technology than the S&P 500 index. And I'm saying by maybe 1%, but it has over allocations to industrials, to energy, to materials, to healthcare. It has over allocations to these industrial sectors. So it's about picking the right stocks and getting them at the right time and making sure they're at appropriate valuation. But really, it all comes down to the fundamental strengths, the long-term fundamental strengths of a stock. And you have to be able to have the capacity and the ability to understand what the fundamentals are and to be able to do that research. And this is why we're hired, because most folks don't have that experience that we do at Davidson Capital Management. So it was a great question. Of course, my answer in an email was very long-winded, as as they normally are. But like Jeff said, there's a lot of stocks out there that get zero fanfare, that are overlooked. Sometimes they're small cap stocks. Sometimes they're mid cap stocks that are just not household names, but they provide products and services that are needed by people across this country on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis. And those are the real diamonds in the rough. Let's take another commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Your Money Wise guys will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So in our last segment of the first hour of this weekend's MoneyWise program, recapped Wall Street, talked about the Fed probably longer than Dad would want us to talk about. You know, we were talking in the last segment, or segment before that, as far as, you know, trying to find catalysts that would cause the market to come down or to have some type of corrective pattern, which we have not had in months and months and months. And Jeff, you were talking about earnings. Now, I know, I think 2 weeks ago, we were talking about how the Magnificent Seven or the Five or the Six, however many you want to count, they're showing that their earnings projections for the first quarter of 2024 was going to be coming down from last year, but we're still talking about earnings growth of around 27%. But for the rest of the S&P 500, we're finally moving into more of a positive earnings growth picture. And so I think when it comes to, you know, the earnings, which is going to be starting, you know, next month after we get out of the first quarter, I think it really comes down to a lot of it with the forward guidance. Because, I mean, just on Friday, we saw Lululemon, for instance, who beat top and bottom line, but their forward guidance, they dialed it back, they were being prudent, and they just got walloped double digits to the, yeah, they just got whacked to the downside. And Lulu is a fundamentally strong and sound company. They have been for many, many years, very popular brand, you know, really now going worldwide. But it's really coming down a lot of times to the forward guidance. And here's the thing. If you're a CEO going into a presidential election, you know, it's going to be between Trump and Biden. You know, most likely, you know, without any of the finagling of votes, you know, Trump should, I would feel would be a shoo-in to win the presidency. But why not be more conservative? But it's kind of sending a message to these CEOs. You better be very careful on not dialing back your forward guide too much, or you're going to, you know, get hit with a 10 down 15%.
Well, Nike did,
and it's kind of frustrating. Yeah, Nike. Yeah, exactly. Same thing happened to Nike. It's like they're being prudent. They're trying to keep the bar reasonably, you know, at a reasonable level, and the market's just punishing them.
So the key is going to be, when one of these Magnificent Seven, you know, has one of these moments, and they get whacked 10-15%, who's that going to be? And will that ring some kind of bell that's the end of, you know, if it's NVIDIA by chance, or one of the other stocks closely associated with that universe, will people come out of the woodwork and say, you know, that's ringing the bell. Okay, there's the top of AI. There's the top of the euphoria with regards to that. It could, you know, trigger a correction. In any given year, you're going to have a 10% correction any time. When was the last time we had a 10% correction?
We had one last year, but it took 3 months to get to it. It started in August and it ended in October. And so it was just a slow oozing 3 month corrective move to get to that 10%, you know, that kind of standard 10% correction. It didn't happen in 1 month or a handful of weeks. It took 3 months.
But what was it that turned that around?
Dovish Fed, when Jay Powell came out, and he came out not with just dovish tone, he came in with a box of doves, opened the lid, shook them all out in the room, and the market was off to the races, and we've been there ever since.
Right.
That's this four-month rally we've been seeing.
I don't know if they're going to have any more dovishness from the Fed that could potentially blunt that kind of a move if we get some not as good as expected earnings here in the next few weeks. But we're going to be, you know, investors will be sitting on the edge of their seats as they typically do in any given earnings season. But given the run that we've had here of late, maybe they're sitting on the edge of their seats a little more than usual, just because of how far we've come. And
but we really haven't come that far, though. We talked about it earlier in the program. We really haven't come that far since the January 2022 highs. I mean, we've come 9% since January of 20, you know, for over 2 years, we've come 9%. GDP's up 13%. So if a company does give kind of dialed back forward guidance, and they are whacked because of it, for individuals who like the company, who like the product or the service they provide, and if the fundamentals are strong, that could be seen as a buying opportunity. And reporting earlier in the show, with $6 trillion sitting in money markets, although we don't know of that amount of money what could be destined for the stock market, but there's still a lot of cash on the sidelines, those kind of whacking moments could be used as a buying opportunity, because there is really a lack of potential negative catalysts. I mean, there really are, because we know the Fed is dialing back on quantitative tightening. We know that they're willing to cut interest rates before we get to their 2% mandate. We still have full employment, although unemployment has ticked up a bit. And so there's going to be some companies that come out with magnificent earnings, some not so good, some with great forward guides. Some, I think we're going to hear more conservative forward guides, Jeff. I mean, that just, it would make more sense. Because we still are in a presidential election year.
Yeah, I don't know if the market wants to hear conservative forward guidance. I don't think that's what they're...
No, I'm not saying that they want to, but I'm not saying that's a bad thing long term. I mean, we're long term owners of stocks. We're not renters of stocks. You know, we're going to buy a company. We want to hold minimum of 12 months. And for some of our stocks, we've owned for many years. And we were owning NVIDIA when it wasn't doing the best, before this whole AI evolution took place. And so obviously the strong internal fundamentals of NVIDIA and our proprietary research process has proven itself. But going back to AI, I mean, Jeff, I don't even think they've been able to quantify yet what AI could mean from a financial standpoint, because we're literally at the tip of the iceberg, you know. And I heard some interviews that Jim Cramer did of the CEO of NVIDIA. I highly recommend anyone listening to the show, go track some of these interviews down. The founder and CEO of NVIDIA, what AI could wind up doing for us as a society is immense. I mean, it hasn't even fully been able to be quantified yet of how it could be used. And so I have a feeling that the founder of NVIDIA will someday be ahead of Elon Musk as the wealthiest man in the world after hearing him speak. and just how eloquent he is. I mean, it's one of the best CEO interviews I've seen in quite a long period of time. So I highly recommend everyone track that down on YouTube, the interview that Jensen Huang gave with Jim Cramer. So with that, we're coming up to the top of our break, so we're going to take the break, go into the news. When we come back, we'll be diving into the second hour of this weekend's MoneyWise program and continuing with investor education. So stay tuned, and we're going to do that after this. You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. You MoneyWise guys will be back after the news.
All opinions expressed by Davidson Capital Management on MoneyWise are solely theirs and are based upon information they consider reliable and is subject to change without notice. You should be aware of the risk in investing in any security or investment strategy discussed on the show. Before acting, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and should seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
Welcome back. You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. I've got my father, John, my brother, Jeff. I'm your host, Kyle Davidson, and we are diving into the second hour of this weekend's MoneyWise program. Now, if you'd like to learn more about the MoneyWise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, you can reach us in our Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you have an investment-related question or topic you'd like for us to discuss here on the MoneyWise program, you can send all your emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com.
If you missed the first hour of MoneyWise, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Click on the radio show link where you can listen to today's show as well as past MoneyWise programs. You can also subscribe to our iTunes feed by clicking on the blue note in the upper right-hand corner of our homepage at davidsoncap.com.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Well, it's about time. Thank you. Thank you for your politeness. Well, as we like to use and utilize the second hour of every weekend's MoneyWise program, really going into investor education and just, again, the continuing education that all investors need to be paying attention to, because with the multitude of investment choices, the multitude of sales outlets, I should say, to be buying different financial products, we feel it's our duty, having a voice and having this radio show, to continue to provide that education. And there was an article that we've had for some time. We've talked about it on past shows, but it's always good to reiterate. And it's a conversation I know that I have with prospective clients when it comes to investing. And the title of the article is "The Best Investment Advice Ever." Now, there's so much different advice out there, different guidance, different forms and levels of education out there. You know, looking at this article, there's a very old saying that I know we have used from day one, and of course with us, you know, being in this, having Davidson Capital Management for more than 25 years, and again, this radio show going on now in our 10th year. Looking at rule number one for the best investment advice ever, and that first rule is never lose money. Rule number two, don't forget rule number one. And I believe that that was one of Warren Buffett's famous advice. And, of course, Warren Buffett being one of the richest men in the world, I think it's good words to live by. And when I sit down with prospective clients, the one area, again, of education I like to focus on is teaching a prospective client that it's not as much how well you do on the upside when the market is going up. It's how shallow you keep your hole on the downside. It's whoever plays the best defense is what's really going to build long-term wealth and longevity of a portfolio.
Rule number one, don't you think it's kind of unrealistic to say never lose money?
Well, and again, investors need to keep in mind there's a difference between realized losses and unrealized losses or paper losses.
Maybe rule number one should read more like never put all your eggs in one basket.
Define that a little bit more.
Never put 100% of your money in one asset class. How's that? Okay. Never put 100% of your money in stocks.
Give us an asset class. Like, are you talking sector specific, like all in real estate investment trusts, or all in the material sector, or all in technology?
I think really the rule number one to me, and it kind of goes along the same lines as what you're talking about with keeping the hole shallow, is there's no such thing as never lose money. I mean, every investment we have never had an investment decision that we've made in the 25 years as Davidson Capital Management, every investment decision that we've made has not always made money. Some of those investment decisions have lost money. There isn't a single person on the planet that's made an investment decision that hasn't lost money at one time or the other. The really successful people in investing never lose a lot of money.
Now, keeping that
whole
shallow.
Keeping the whole shallow, as you were saying. And 2008 is a great example of keeping the whole as shallow as possible, because we were never 100% invested in stocks that year. And we were also reducing stocks as that year went on. And so we didn't suffer the 35, our clients' portfolios didn't suffer the 35, 40, 50% losses that the investors that we saw come to us in 2009 and 2010, and we asked them, you know, how did you do in 2008? And they said, well, I lost 40%, or I lost more than 40%. We knew right then and there that they had way too much money in stocks, if not their entire portfolio in stocks, and it wasn't being managed properly, obviously.
That's a key. It wasn't actively managed. It was, and again, that set it and forget it mentality, that set it and forget it portfolio.
So the rule number one, this never lose money, and rule number two, never forget rule number one, is all fine and good, but it's not realistic, because if you're going to have a diversified portfolio of stocks and bonds, cash, and all different types of asset classes, some of those asset classes aren't going to make money in a particular year. Some will. Some will be more successful than others, but I think it's unrealistic to expect to never to lose money in investing. Because if rule number one, never lose money, that means you're never going to take risk.
Which means
you're going to be own CDs. Sorry to take your thunder away there. You're going to own government bonds and hold them to maturity, or you're going to own CDs
or cash,
or you're going to have cash. Well, that I don't know too many investors that can reach their retirement goals just by being in cash or government bonds.
Well, and again, when you are invested and you're invested in the stock market or even the bond market, when you look at an unrealized gain and loss report, if you're showing some unrealized losses, those are paper losses. Those are losses that you have not taken. It's just on paper. It's just numbers. But that loss will become realized if you decide to sell out. And what happened to a lot of investors in 2008 is they watched the ride all the way down. And then they got to their maximum pain threshold, and what do? They sold. And for a lot of investors, after they did that sell and the selling they did, they have yet to get back in. That's why we continue to face the very thin market conditions, the whipsawing of the markets, because there's fewer and fewer participants, because they still have not gotten back in, because they're still licking and taking care of their wounds from 2008, because they sold out and turned those unrealized losses to realized losses. But if they had a proper allocation and having their assets actively managed, they wouldn't have suffered as much pain and distress in their portfolio as we have seen doing our portfolio reviews and analysis of prospective clients. So, well, we're going to pause right there. We're going to take another commercial break. You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. We'll be back after these words. Welcome back. You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about us, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, you can reach us in our Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So continuing our investor education and talking about an article titled The Best Investment Advice Ever, And, you know, again, the old Warren Buffett saying, you know, rule number one, never lose money. Rule number two, never forget rule number one. And us just kind of really discussing how that's kind of unrealistic. Because like Jeff, like you said in the last segment, you're going to run into some type of losses, be it unrealized or realized losses at some point in time in your investing career, unless you're invested in cash, which isn't an investment, CDs, or government bonds. You know, you have to take a certain level of risk. You have to assume a certain level of risk to have the potential for capital appreciation and growth of your assets to meet your retirement goals or for whatever goals that you're saving for. And, Dad, I know that you wanted to – the big dog wanted to eat a little bit and had something to add to what we were just talking about.
Well, I think I originally said this to you when you guys came into the business.
Oh, you've been saying this as long as I can remember.
These were basic rules of investing. I honestly think this is a little bit of a Will Rogers comment. I'm not so sure that Warren Buffett didn't steal this from
Will Rogers.
Who never met a man he didn't like. And what this means, you know, this is, you know, this will be my 37th year, starting my 38th year of being a portfolio manager, not counting the 4 years as a broker and 1 year in graduate school, so you can add all that up. But when I see this, what this really means to me is never lose big money. Never take big losses because you can't come back from them, whether it's financially or even psychologically.
Hold on. Let me stop you right there. You just hit an important point. Psychologically.
It's the psychological point of this. A lot of people get in investing. They get in the game, as Jim Cramer calls it. It's not a game. But they get in the game, and they have some moderate success, and then they start building their bet.
They start pushing the chips
and
further
and further.
And
as they build their bet, they will get to the point where they lose. Now, to be successful, the one thing that I have learned in my 37-plus years, to be successful in investing, you have to invest on a regular basis. You just can't do it once in a while. And you need to take a number of positions because as you take positions, your batting average gets better. And to be successful, it isn't participating when the markets go up, as you said. It's not losing as much going down. So I believe my personal success as an investor has come with my ability to sell. I think I'm a lot better seller than I am a buyer.
And one thing that we say in this office, and this was definitely true in 2008, and of course, you know, this was prior to me joining the family's firm back. Jeff, I know you were here back during the dot-com bubble bursting of the dot-coms, is that when the markets and times just don't make sense, when what's up is down and what's down is up, when there's times where the market doesn't make sense, it never hurts to get more liquid and lay in the weeds. I know that's an old saying, Dad, that I've heard come out of your mouth for years, way before I even joined the family business, that it's okay sometimes to raise liquidity and lay in the weeds until things get a little clearer. Now, it's important for all investors to understand you're never going to have 100% clarity. The waters are never going to be 100% clear. There's always going to be some level of cloudiness, but in situations like the dot-coms, like 2008, even like how the markets have started off in the past couple of years, things get a little clouded and get a little bit more whipsawish. And sometimes it's better to just kind of raise some cash and lay back until things start to pan out and make a little bit more sense, because that's what we've been dealing with is some just counterintuitiveness that we've been experiencing in the market for the past couple of years.
You know, and this led me to what we were talking about earlier, rule number one, never lose money, never forget rule number one, this is rule number two. Well, if we were in an environment where government bonds was paying 9%, then a lot of people would be attracted to that. And there's been times in my career when you could do that. And so there's a riskless return that would be historically a good return. Unfortunately, that was occurring when inflation was at 12, 13, 14. So you were losing just
inflation.
Like today. Mm-hmm. Just like today, if you put too much in bonds versus what each individual person's inflation rate is. But what this really says is what y'all were talking about, is that if you're going to put all your eggs in one basket, if you're going to step out there and take that level of risk, then you are potentially putting yourself in a position to lose a substantial amount of your money and not have enough money to get back into the game, whatever game it is you're playing.
But again, we don't look at the market as
no,
a game.
It's not a game.
It's not a game at all.
But if you're a trader, I would say a trader views the market somewhat as a game.
I'd agree.
If you're an investor, it's a serious game. And so each individual has to decide what type of, is he a trader? Am I an investor? Or is this trading money? Is this investing money? So there's various pools that you could be doing. But one thing that you cannot do is you cannot sustain large losses and be a successful investor or trader. So whatever method you use to reduce your losses,
your risk,
you're going to have to take that. And if you don't determine a system that allows you to do that, you are not going to be successful
in the long term. Absolutely. And see, that's the thing, Dad, is I think for some investors, maybe the traders that view the market as more of a game, more of action, more Vegas style, they have a couple of big wins where they knock it out of the park, and that boosts their confidence, that helps them boost their trading and investing ego psychologically. That's when they start pushing the chips further and further over the line and bigger amounts of chips. Then they strike out, then they take that loss, and then the psychological aspect of it might be a loss so bad that they say, to heck with the stock market, I'm never getting involved in it again. And what we've always advocated and always tried to teach is about a proper balance, about diversification. As Jeff said, not putting all your eggs in one basket, spreading out that risk, or to use a technical term, spreading out your beta. But you can't just spread it out and forget it. You have to continue to actively manage it, actively monitor it. And if you don't, then you need to work with a firm that's going to do that.
I learned many years ago that I was not a successful trader. Trading was not something that I was good at. I was good at looking at a longer picture. It fit my personality better to be an investor. Plus, by taking a longer-term view, thinking in terms in the stock market of actually owning the company that I was buying, I found that that was more successful. And I learned that as a broker. I felt comfortable with that. What I didn't feel comfortable with was potential clients or new clients that had to have action. Because I don't necessarily think Wall Street is the best place to get action. I think you would be better off to go to Vegas because it doesn't require that much thinking if you need action. If you like to bet on football games.
If you need that fix.
If you need that. And there are people that need that. But Wall Street can be a very dangerous place for people that need that type of fix. I have not run into that many successful people who have traded the market. I've run into many successful investors, very few successful traders.
Well, and I think some other points you made just a few minutes ago, when we talk about risk capacity, about taking a big hit to your portfolio, and again, for continuing investor education, the older you get, the closer you get to your retirement, I guess, date and time as far as your age, your risk capacity gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And I've run into people who have very large risk, very small risk tolerance, their personal aversion to risk, but they have huge risk capacity. And when you run into that situation, it's really they have their money invested very lazily. It's very lazy money. It's very 4% and 5% returns when they should be taking advantage of their age. So the younger you are, the greater risk capacity you have. And so you have to really marry risk tolerance and risk capacity into one. And that's, again, something else that we try to teach. So just understand, as you get older, your risk capacity gets smaller, and you have to have your portfolio managed and allocated in a way that reflects that risk capacity.
What you see on CNBC, and we don't spend that much time watching any of the other channels, but what we see on CNBC is a parade of traders. Parade of people looking for action, daily action, weekly action.
Fast money.
You know, everything is geared towards trading.
Mm-hmm.
That is that segment of the market. That is not a segment that Davidson Capital Management has ever participated in or would feel comfortable being in. And so when we sit here and we talk about what we see, we don't necessarily feel that that type of program serves the public to the extent it could.
That's right. Well, with that, we're coming to the bottom of the hour break. So we'll take the break. When we come back, we'll be continuing our investor education, and we'll do that after this. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, you can reach us in our Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you have an investment-related question or topic you'd like for us to cover here on the Money Wise program, you can send all your emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So continuing talking about the best investment advice ever article that comes from MarketWatch and the Wall Street Journal. You know, Dad, as you were talking in the last segment, you know, you mentioned Jim Cramer's name, and I know there's a segment on his show that he loves to do where people call in and say, am I diversified? And they give him five stock names, and he'll either anoint it as being you're diversified or you're not diversified. And when I watch that, to me, it seems like it's a disservice to the investing public, because what he is basically, validating is that it's okay to put 20% of your money in one particular stock position, to hold five individual stocks, and as long as those five individual stocks are in five different industry sectors, then you're okay, you're safe. And I think that is some of the most dangerous advice you could possibly give with his type of background and acumen as a money manager, or as a hedge fund manager, I should say.
Well, I don't agree with it. Dangerous. It's dangerous if you don't watch your eggs real close. If you only got five,
you're making big bets on five companies.
In the beginning, when I created the philosophy, it became apparent to me that I didn't ever want more than 5% in anything, because I learned very quickly that if I bought
5% of your assets in one individual position.
Yes. If I bought 10 positions, 3.5 of them were going to be losers, but I loved all 10. Mm-hmm. And so when I got it out to 20, then I'm going to have six losers in normal markets. Mm-hmm. And the key was having the six losers not be big enough losers to overset the profits that were in the other 14. Well, if I'm Jim Cramer, and five is my diversification, I sure hope it's not my six losers, because then those whole five positions would be losers. So to me, that was not enough positions to be diversified. That was very concentrated. And to be that concentrated, I don't want you to think you're diversified. You are not diversified with five positions.
I mean, you might be diversified in the sense that you're in five different industry sectors, but you're making a very large bet on one company in that industrial
sector. And I'll tell
you
something else. If you limit yourself to that few of positions, you're either going to do extremely well versus the market, or you're going to do extremely badly. You're not going to do average. You're either going to do real well or real bad.
So it's either a home run or a strikeout.
Now, you can't build a business on real bad. Mm-mm. Now, he was successful as a hedge fund manager because he was a trader. He was not an investor. Long term to him could have been one day. So when you hear him discuss that, I mean, he can't do a show and do Am I Diversified and have someone give him 20 positions. So some of his Am I Diversified is
for TV. It's for TV.
He did it first on his radio show. Mm-hmm. That's where it started. He did that on the radio show. Now, he used to do radio and TV, and his radio show was really a whole lot better than the TV show. He didn't do all that screaming and jumping around like he does, and he would just talk, which I found better for investors to listen to. He was more investor-oriented as opposed to trading. So us saying that we believe you ought to have 20 positions gets back to this fact that we don't want more than 5% of any person's assets in one position. And we say that even in your company stock. If you're investing in your company stock, the stock where you work.
Through your 401k.
Yeah, we don't want more than 5% of your retirement money in the company stock. And I don't care how great the stock is. Because I happen to have seen times in my life where I worked for companies where people put a lot more in that, and then the companies went out of business. They not only lost their job, but they lost their retirement.
And I can tell you that Jeff and I see this doing portfolio reviews a lot with the petroleum industry employees, putting a lot of their retirement nest egg through 401ks in their company stock. And it's great to be supportive, and it's great to love where you work and love who your employer is, but you also have to kind of be a little selfish and think about your own retirement needs and your own retirement nest egg and not take too big of a bet, because again, harkens back to Enron, harkens back to WorldCom. I mean, it harkens back to those employees years ago who lost their nest egg because there was a lot of cheerleading from upper level management to keep funneling as much money in it as possible. Not saying that any companies in existence today are, you know, doing some of the fraudulent things that these companies were doing, but you always have to look out for kind of number one. I mean, you have to look out for number one when you're saving for retirement. And, you know, another thing that I like to teach, particularly when it comes to long-term investing and when it comes to performance, I always like to use the analogy is you have to look at your investment returns like a batting average. Like a batting average for a baseball player. You know, let's use Ted Williams or let's use Tony Gwynn. May he rest in peace. Let's use him as an example. You know, baseball players can get into the Hall of Fame with having a great lifetime batting average. But throughout their career, throughout the lifetime of them stepping up to the plate, they're going to have years where they underperform, where they don't have a good year at the up at the plate and they don't bat very well. And they have low numbers. And then they're going to have other years where they have some average years. And then they're going to have some great years where they're knocking the cover off the ball. But what determines whether or not a baseball player gets into the Hall of Fame is their lifetime batting average. And it's the combination of all of those years and how they've performed. It's the same thought process and the same thought pattern you need to have when it comes to investing. You're going to have some below average years. You're going to have some just average years, and you're going to have some great years. But the key is to have more great years than bad and average years to get your portfolio to the Hall of Fame.
Well, here's a little commercial coming in here. This is our 26th year, and I was talking about I'm starting my 38th year as a manager. There was 12 years in there before Davidson Capital Management was formed in which I developed our philosophy. And I developed it managing money under three or four different corporate situations where I learned what was working and what wasn't working. And, I learned on other people's money, so to speak. But I learned through those years that 100% equity made no sense. 100% bond made no sense. But the two could work together in combination. But what I found was there were fixed income people, and there were stock people. There wasn't both. You didn't see the hybrid. You didn't see the manager that could do both sides. And so as I developed our philosophy, I learned that it made more sense to be 10 years and under. It made more sense to stick with quality, because by sticking with quality, you took risk out. By having stocks and bonds, you took risk out. And by doing that, you raised your batting average. You made the hole shallower when you were losing in stocks you were making in bonds. And so in the beginning, oh, yeah, everyone knows the most money you can make is to be 100% in the stock market. And it works really good until 1987 rolls around and it goes down 25% in one day. That doesn't work very well. That wipes out a number of years in about 4 hours. And you learn, hey, this doesn't make a lot of sense. And same thing in the late 90s. Oh, yeah, it was wonderful when the dot-coms were going crazy, but it didn't look real good late in 2000, 2001, and 2002. And, you know, staying the course was really great in January, February, March of 2008. It wasn't very great in November, December 2008.
Or
because
January, February.
There might not be a course to stay. You might not have had enough course to have a meal.
Well, and again, that goes back to what we talked about a few segments ago about the psychological damage. And I know that we've talked on past shows here on Money Wise where we've talked about the psychological effects when you take these kind of losses and how, again, it creates that emotion and that fear. And when fear and emotion start combining into your portfolio, it keeps you sitting on the sidelines or it keeps you less invested in stocks to really try to achieve and reach your goal for whatever you're saving for. And we're still seeing that today. I mean, again, we're seeing it today because we see the volatility. If there is more participants, more investors in this market, more mom and pop investors, we wouldn't see this extreme levels of volatility that we've been seeing.
If we taxed day trading, we wouldn't have this extreme volatility.
Or if we taxed high-frequency trading or got high-frequency trading under control.
That's what I'm saying. That would take care of that problem. The problem is that high-frequency trading is paying the note for the New York Stock Exchange. That's how they're making their money. They are never going to go against that. For something to change in that market, it's going to have to come from outside. It's not going to come from within Wall Street.
Well, really what we have to have, Dad, is we have to have a nonprofit exchange. We have to have a nonprofit exchange.
You guys will see that. I'm convinced.
You think Jeff and I will see a nonprofit exchange?
I really think you will see that in your lifetime. You will see a national market.
I mean, because that will take away the incentive for the high-frequency trading.
It'll be somewhere in the central part of the country away from Wall Street.
I welcome that day. I welcome the day to where we see a nonprofit exchange and maybe just a one central exchange.
Let me correct him. Jeff may not see it. I think you will see it, Kyle.
Well, we're not that far away in age, so it's only about less than 10 years
in there.
All right, well, let's take our last commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. We'll be back after these words. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, you can reach us in our Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So going back to this article, there was a couple of other statements, and these actually come from Ben Franklin, and one of them is, an investment in knowledge pays the most interest. And again, one of the reasons why we started this radio show back in late 2005 was because it gave us a podium, it gave us a platform to provide education, because there's such a lack of education out there, and it seems like a lot of the education that is available has a particular bent. You know, it's trying to push you in a certain direction as an investor to buy an investment product that's being sold by the financial legacy distribution system. You know, as we like to call it, it always seems that education is kind of pushing you one direction or another, and we're trying to provide unbiased education. And as we always say to all investors is that, you know, there are so many tools available online for you to educate yourself. You know, when a pitch sounds too good to be true, it most likely is, and there's a lot of vehicles out there to help you to educate yourself. And so as Benjamin Franklin says, an investment in knowledge pays the most interest. You have to really let that kind of soak into you and utilize the tools available. You know, if you want to look up the broker that you're working with, go to brokercheck.com. You know, someone's pitching you an investment product. Before you sign on the line and which is dotted, look it up. Do some research. Educate yourself. You know, as we say, if you can't explain it to a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old in 2 or 3 minutes and get them to understand that, then you're probably, it's not a good idea to buy. Another statement is, beware of expenses. A small leak will sink a great ship. And boy, how many times have we seen that, Jeff?
You know, expenses is one thing that is easiest to control if you understand that you're getting charged more fees than you think you are to begin with. And I see this a lot with, we see this a lot with annuities. Annuities, I think, are probably one of the biggest challenges.
I would say drains on assets.
The biggest challenges to a portfolio being successful is owning an annuity inside that portfolio, because you're basically guaranteeing that you will never even equal a market average performance, because the fees and expenses built into the annuity itself, even if it has the best possible investment options, and trust me, the average annuity does not have the best investment choices possible. When you add up average investment choices with high expenses, you're guaranteed to be below average consistently year after year after year after year. And they're still sold. They're still successfully selling them to investors every single day. And we've, in the 10 years that we've done this show, we've almost made this our personal
mission.
There you go.
It's a personal mission.
Crusade.
To
steer
crusade.
People away from these types of investments. Now, there's also many other violators. You know, the average loaded mutual fund carries an initial sales charge that's equal to multiple years of professional full-time investment management just to buy into the mutual fund itself. They, you know, a minimum, you know, anywhere from 2-3% to almost as much as 6% is very common in an upfront sales charge. Another thing is buying stocks. You know, just buying stocks through a full service broker. And you're the average ticket price that I see from a full service broker is about 2% of the gross purchase. And that is outrageous. So, you know, for $5,000 purchase, you're paying $250 in transaction costs. I mean, that's 20 times more you'd pay at a discount brokerage firm.
Yes, well, you better be getting good advice you're paying that kind of fee.
Now,
if that broker is giving you good advice and covers the 2%, that's one thing. But you and I both know, unfortunately, the vast majority of them do not.
Well, the one thing, again, talking about fees and what I like to do for any individual investor out there is to understand the two big types of fees. You have your hard dollar fees and your soft dollar fees. Your hard dollar fees are your upfront commissions. You know, those are the commissions that you see when you buy that mutual fund or you buy that stock and you pay that commission and you see it come right off the top. You see that difference in what you're investing and what you actually paid and what was actually invested. That's a hard dollar cost. But where annuities, where non-traded real estate investment trusts, where even mutual funds, once you get past that initial sales fee, really get their investors or get their clients is on the soft dollar side. Those are the fees that are accrued daily and taken out daily that you never see. When you get your statement from your annuity, that's net of those soft dollar fees. When you get a statement about your stocks or your individual mutual funds, it's net of those soft dollar fees. Those are the fees that you don't see. Those are the fees that you also need to be asking about. And if you're sitting down and someone's pitching you an annuity and you ask them, well, what are the soft dollar charges, they're not going to know what to do. They're not going to know what to do, and they're going to start trying to provide you with the half-truths of what you're actually
spending.
Well,
they're going to focus on these guaranteed returns.
The G word.
Yeah, they're going to focus on the G word.
Which, again, is not a guarantee. It's just a promise, and it's only as good as the company providing the promise.
They're going to say, don't you want 5% a year guaranteed income for the rest of your life? Don't you want that, Mr. or Mrs. Customer? And it's not quite that simple.
Nope. And what they're talking about is the published interest rate, which changes monthly. It's just that hook to get you to sign on that line, and which is dotted to get you into that long surrender charge penalty period so they can lock your assets up. So you have to understand the difference between hard dollar costs and soft dollar costs. And soft dollar costs are in the prospectus. Soft dollar costs are in the information, but you have to know what you're looking for. And you have to dig deeper, as we've always said from day one on this program. And to really summarize this hour is you have to dig deeper and use the tools available to educate yourself before you make that investment decision.
Number one,
be
diversified. Number two, know what you own. Do the research. Dig deeper, as you say. And number three, always have a mind on what it's costing.
That's right. Okay, and with that, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to this weekend's MoneyWise program. Again, if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday, you could reach us at 906-0070 or toll-free at 1-800-275-2162. For my father, John, and my brother, Jeff, this is Kyle Davidson saying have a fantastic weekend. And to your financial health, we will talk to you next week.